Hey there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 361. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com, stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is This Show Is So Gay. And of course, go on over to that Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. Well, one thing that I rarely, if ever, do at the start of the show is say the date, but I will tell you that we are recording this week's episode on July 4th. So if you hear some fireworks, yes, you could assume it might be celebrating our country's independence, or it could be just really loud applause for this week's guest, who I'm going to introduce you to right this very second. Tucky Williams is an actor, a writer, a producer, a casting director, and so much more. This is a woman who creates incredible content that finds its way into our lives. She is the creator, writer, and star of the insanely popular web series Girl, Girl Scene, for which she won Best Original Screenplay at the 2010 World Independent Film Expo. She's been named to the Advocate's 40 Under 40 list, one of our favorite lists of all the lists. Her most recent project is Dagger Kiss, a very queer take on the beloved fantasy genre. I watched the entire season a few days ago, and it was so much flippin' fun. We're going to talk all about that. But first, Tucky, welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
Hey, I'm so happy to be back. I love it. I love this show.
It has been 5 years since you've been on the show. When we first recorded, I think you and I were only 14 or 15 years old.
That's right. And we still look great.
And we look is so remarkably well preserved, both of us, I think.
Yes, it's all the formaldehyde.
I love it. Well, we have so much ground to cover, Tucky. Are you ready?
I am so ready.
Well, let's start with you as we start with all of our film-affiliated people. Why the medium of film to get your voice out there, Tucky?
Because I think that is the way we change the culture, is through pop culture, and I want to make this world a better place for women and for gay people and for young people. The best way to do that is through movies and TV shows and web series and stuff that they can watch.
I love it. You have always had kind of an eye for film, right? Like, if we dial back, because if people have not listened to your interview in 5 years, which, I mean, you and I listen to it every morning, but for folks who have not heard it, you got your start in the wonderful world of meteorology.
I did. I like television. I wanted to be on TV, and I wanted to be sharing goodness with people and seeing them, you know, having them see my face every morning and sort of giving them good vibes when they started their day.
Tell everybody about Good Morning Kentucky, which could just be a sitcom with your name in it, but it's an actual show.
It's an actual show, yes, and I used to co-host and co-anchor it. And I was realizing the other day that they never tested me on the air. They just put me down in front of the teleprompter and gave me stories to read. And thank God, it turned out I could do it.
It could have turned out
very badly for them.
It could have turned out badly. It did not turn out badly. Now, were you like one of those storm chasers growing up? What was with you and the weather?
I was not. I was in journalism school, and I was going to be a reporter, and I was interning at a TV station, and I started hanging out in the weather center, or like, you know, the storm center, something like that. I started hanging out in the weather center with the meteorologists, and I realized they were having a lot more fun. And sitting in a room by yourself is more my speed than going out and chasing stories. So that's what I decided to go with. I decided to switch over to meteorology.
Now, I've seen those morning shows. They sometimes send the meteorologist out into the field to do some weird stuff. Did you have to do any weird stuff?
Oh, I never did.
Oh.
I just got to stay in the studio and wear my little dresses and fix my makeup.
Okay, that works too, though.
They didn't have the budget to send people out, and nothing is really happening at 5 a.m.
I feel like you could have made it happen, but you could have made it happen.
I could have made it happen.
Yeah, it's all good. Okay, so then we're doing a little Tucky Williams. This is your life. So then you see kind of you see an open call, an open audition, and nobody said, Tucky, you don't get your first role, because you, Tucky, went out there and got your first role.
I did. There was an open casting call for a movie, so I went and I got it.
Look at
that. I got the female lead.
And tell everybody about that project, because it was quite a significant one for you. This is your first one.
Oh, this one, the first one wasn't as significant. The significant one was Dead Moon Rising.
Oh, okay.
That was the zombie movie. That was the one that, really changed my life forever. Are we going to talk about that?
Yo, we are going to. Let's talk about that, because one of the fun things about that project is that that gave you access to all of those kind of the horror movie genre. I was reading interviews and watching interviews on YouTube. They love you in the horror genre.
It's a wonderful community, the horror community, and it's wonderful people. You would think it would be really creepy people, really scary people, but they're the nicest people in the world, these horror movie people. I love it that I have fans who love my movies. And I love that I got to be in one of the first zombie movies before it turned into a thing. So that was 10 years ago. Can you believe it?
You've been to the conventions, correct?
I did all the conventions. I burnt out on conventions. Now I go to conventions, but I just kind of get them to give me the free pass, and then I go and meet all the celebrities, and then I go home.
Tell me a Tucky Williams celebrity run-in that you had at a convention that you loved.
There's so many. Oh, I met Brent Spiner, Data, on Star Trek. I met him, and he was such a gentleman. You know, I loved Data, of course, when I was a little girl. I didn't say that to him, of course, but I love Data. You know, he's everybody's favorite character, and you want the actor to be as wonderful as the character, and he was. He was such a gentleman, and it was great. I have some great pictures with him. He's very, very kind. And then there's Michael Biehn. I love Michael Biehn.
Oh, nice.
You know, from Aliens and Terminator. He was just wonderful. I know I'm leaving out some of the funnier stories. I can't remember. Greg Grunberg, his son has epilepsy. So we got to talk about epilepsy a lot. That was recent.
Do you get all fangirl, or are you able to keep it together?
I sort of go in between. I'm just like, you know, I'm clearly a fan, so I'm just going to say my stuff, and you just have to hear me say how great I think you are. And, you know, I don't try to make myself special in any way.
Well, one of the things that I love about your career, now you could go out there and you could audition and you can get a million parts out there, but at some point you decided, I need to start really creating the content that I want to see out there. How did that evolution happen?
Oh, that's right. It was because if you go out to Hollywood, I'm just saying Hollywood, we know that everybody who goes out there goes to the Valley, but you have no control. You're going to auditions. Can you imagine auditioning for commercials?
No.
And, you know, even if I had been successful, I wouldn't have been doing projects I wanted to do. And what I wanted to do was be on a show about that would help the LGBT community, and that was what inspired me, and that was my passion. And so I thought, even if I go out there, I'm going to get, you know, a tampon commercial. I'm not going to get to be in a show that really changes lives. So I decided to stay here in Kentucky and make my own show. And that was one of the best decisions I've ever made.
I will say my first tampon commercial did not go over well. It was not very good for the product. It wasn't.
You know, as I was saying that, I was like, do I really want to say tampon commercial? And I was like, yep, we're going there.
You and I go there. That's what we do. That's what we do. When we first chatted 5 years ago, you know, girl scene was getting established. It wasn't the mega hit at that time that it became. Did you see it going in that direction?
I did. I was young.
What was the point that you knew, oh, whoa, people are definitely taking to this content?
It took a long time for it to hit me. It was when I couldn't answer my fan mail anymore.
Oh.
And then it was like, okay, this has gotten big. I used to answer all the fan mail, every single thing, because I wanted everyone to know I appreciated them, and then it just got to be, I couldn't do it anymore, so
yeah.
That was when I knew. And then I started seeing numbers and analytics and stuff, and the numbers were huge on people watching. And so I'm like, okay, this is bigger than what I imagined.
This is big. Was there a narrative thread to the fan mail? Was there something that people were consistently writing in with feedback?
Oh yeah, it was getting mostly two things. One was younger women, girls, like teenagers writing in and saying that, you know, that they had no outlet, that they lived in small towns, or they lived in communities that were very sheltered, you know, and they had no access to the community at all, and their only access was through girl scene. And the other was from people in the Middle East, in Muslim countries, like Afghanistan, Pakistan writing in, and that was men and women just saying that they were never going to have access to this in their entire lives, and they really appreciated that they were able to watch the show.
That's huge. That's one of those threads that has come up for so many of our guests over the years of doing this show, of both that responsibility to portray this content, and also, and tell me if you have felt this at all, there's a slight bit maybe of pressure that comes along with that to get this content out there.
Of course. It's a high because I didn't realize how good it would feel to know I was changing lives. I just wanted to make a great show. And then once you start changing your life, you realize that's like the biggest drug in the world. So the pressure is, how do I keep changing people's lives? How do I keep touching people and affecting them?
Yeah. How do you know when to stop such a successful project?
I don't know. I'm still going.
Yeah.
Have you stopped Girl Girl Scene? And I'm like, no, I'm just taking a break.
So you are going to come back to it.
I might. I'm going to be like Larry David. You know, he made 8 seasons of Curb Your Enthusiasm, and he's taken, a 3-year break, and now he's like, okay, I'm going to do one more.
I love it. I love it. You're like my Gilmore Girls. We're going to all get together in a few years, and that's what we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Great.
When you look at that project, which I will now say that ongoing project, I like saying, you know, not a past project, but ongoing, what are you most proud of?
Oh, there's so many things.
Yeah.
But I'm repeating myself here, but I'm most proud that it was able to reach so many people all over the world. I'm also very, very proud of that I stuck to my concept, which is no hugging, no learning, that I portrayed like the ugly side. I didn't try to like polish up. I'm just going to say gay people. It's easier than the initialism. I'm just going to say gay people. It's easier than polishing it up and making it look pretty. Like, I'm going to say, yeah, I love Modern Family. I love that show, but they're very heteronormative.
Yeah.
And they adopted a kid. And I understand that that's where society has to be right now and have a primetime television show. But I am glad that I went there and I showed what life was like as a lesbian, and I made it look ugly. And it was people who really weren't that nice, and very bad things happening to them, and them doing very bad things. I'm very proud that I stay true to that narrative.
I've read so many fan responses online, and that's the piece that gets shouted out over and over again, that this wasn't this crazy idealized version. You know, it was something that felt real, of people that you could actually know. And so thus, it's really not that surprising that people responded with, hey, you're providing me access to a community that I don't currently have access to right now.
Right.
That's big.
That was my goal.
That was big, and you did it, and you did it. All right.
Thank you.
We have so much to talk about with Dagger Kiss. I barely know where to start. Let's start with, where did the impetus come from? You're going to work in the fantasy genre. Where did this come from?
Okay, well, when I was a little girl, 4 or 5 years old, I loved fantasy movies. I loved Neverending Story. I loved She-Ra. I loved Red Sonja. Those were my things. And I wanted to be that. I wanted to be a warrior or to fly on a dragon, stuff like that. I wanted that more than anything, but I realized that that could not happen for me. So then I had this aha moment, and I realized that if I were an actress, I could do all those things. So that was in my head since I was a child. And then, you know, I didn't really have a way to do it, you know, production values and stuff. And but then Girl Scene happened, and then I said, you know what, I'm going to go in a totally different direction. Well, first off, I was playing Evan, that character. Everybody thought I was Evan. And I'm like, wait a second, I need some credit here. I'm an actress. And so I wanted to show that I could play the opposite end of the spectrum. And the fantasy genre, I finally got to live it out and be the warrior woman who I always wanted to be. And wear the costumes and have the swords and the knives.
Oh, so many different elements. Again, listeners, we are here with Tucky Williams, actor, writer, producer, so much more. We're talking about Dagger Kiss. You mentioned that word costumes, and I saw in the credits that you very much had something to do with those costumes.
Oh, yes. I wanted everyone to have it. And people brought their own costumes, so I want to give credit to them. But the costumes, I think, tell so much of the story. So my costumes I worked really hard on.
I had to imagine, as I'm watching it, that you just felt like a different person when you put that costume on.
It really was that. As soon as the costume comes on, you carry yourself differently, you walk differently, you go back in time to that other place immediately.
For our listeners who, because we're going to give them the links because we want them to check this out, what's our boilerplate pitch for Dagger Kiss? What do we tell people that this is all about?
Medieval sci-fi fantasy adventure with a lesbian twist.
Nice. Nice.
A lesbian Lord of the Rings or a gay Game of Thrones?
We need that. We don't really have that representation. I was reading a meme the other day that, I saw a meme the other day that said, basically, if you're gay in Game of Thrones, you get killed. That's kind of what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Star Trek has never had a gay character, ever.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of implied in some of our other Xena-type shows or the Lord of the Rings. It's not, you know.
Right.
All right.
Right. So I wanted the show that would have helped me so much when I was a little girl. If I had seen this, and if you'll notice the show, we don't say any bad words and nothing bad happens. It's because I want little kids to be able to watch this, because if I had been able to see this when I was a little girl, it would have drastically changed my life and made me feel so much better about myself. I mean, I knew I was a little gay girl back then, so if I could have seen that you could be a warrior and have a really pretty girlfriend, I would have been so happy.
Oh, I love it. A brief note on the costumes. Occasionally I will wear something that feels a little bit too tight, but then I saw what Katya was wearing and I decided, no, I have never worn anything that was too tight, because I would look at her and think, I can't even breathe right now. How is she doing that?
She could not breathe. She and I did not breathe for a week. We couldn't even sit. We would have to lean against things. And sometimes our legs would go numb, but mostly it was the breathing. We would take all the stuff off and go,
I love it.
On a positive note, I had a bit of a backache for about a year or two, and after that, my back has not hurt. It was a back brace.
See? Look, that it's added benefits to, like, Ren fairs all over the place. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
I read in an interview, is this still true? Do you still have a kissing phobia?
I have slowly gotten over it because I have had to kiss so many women. It's become de rigueur.
That is such a resume builder. I love it. You've worked through it.
I have worked through it.
Okay.
Yes, and all kinds of girls kiss all different ways, and I've kissed men now in movies, and that's funny because, you know, it's a surprise because men have the facial hair, and it's like, oh, wait, I'm not expecting that. I'm so used to kissing women.
I took this really random note, and our listeners are going to have to check out Dagger's Kiss to see what I mean. I will just say this. I wrote down episode 3, not a good advertisement for breakfast bars.
Oh, right. Well, Arden is from another planet, and they mostly eat flowers. So she doesn't understand people food.
I wrote that down. I wrote down that I didn't think that you were going to get an endorsement from any breakfast bar for Dagger's Kiss. I'm sorry. I'm looking for marketing opportunities for you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
No problem. Now, the format of this is a little bit different, right? Like, these are some shorter episodes, and you suddenly figure out, by the way, oh my gosh, I just sat down and watched 7 or 8 episodes. Talk to me about creating content that is in these shorter installments.
Well, what I did was I just sort of wrote out a whole screenplay, not thinking in terms of episodes. I wrote the whole thing out, and we shot it, and I said to the director, I just said, just chop it up.
Yeah.
Wherever you think it needs to be chopped up, go for it. And he did exactly that. So he made 8 episodes. The last one is an epic. It's 15 minutes long. It's like 5 to 8 minutes, and then the last one's an epic because he just absolutely couldn't cut up that one. That's how we went into the shorter format. And so I'm writing season 2, and so that's how I'm doing it. I'm just writing it as one thing, and then he can go in and cut it up later.
What was the experience like with working with this cast? It seemed like such a fun cast.
This was the best I've ever had in terms of cast and crew. They were all amazing. I've had great experiences before, and this was even better. Everybody got along. I know people say that all the time, but everybody got along, and everybody had fun, and we would have, like, mini rap parties every night and come back to my house, and everybody would just kind of hang out and talk a little bit. And the last night, I had a birthday cake left over. Everybody ate some of my birthday cake.
You wrote the content, you produced the content, you are starring in the content, but you are not directing the content. How is it relinquishing that control to someone else?
It's great, because I'm already doing too much.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm like, whoever can take control of anything, please do it.
Because I assume that you catered the whole shoot as well, that you provided the food. I feel you drove people around. I feel like you did everything.
I did everything. But I had a lot of great help. A lot of great help.
So much fun.
So I couldn't have done it without them.
So you are writing season two right now. When are we going to be looking out for that? Because you definitely end in a place, and we don't want to ruin anything. We want people to check it out. We'll provide the link.
Ruin it. That'll make people want to watch.
But you certainly leave room for, okay, there are two characters who need to find each other again. When can we look for them to find each other again?
Well, we're going to go into production in October because that is the driest month of the year. Mm-hmm. That's why we picked October. And then it'll be released sometime in 2017.
Love it. That's not that far away. We don't have to wait that long.
I know.
Okay. Now, I wrote down some Tucky Williams ephemera that I want to get at with you. Just random things that I learned about you online or just random things that I've seen. Do you know, I assume that you know, there are like these fan videos to you on YouTube where it's just pictures of you set to music. It's quite lovely.
I know. Those are so sweet. I watch them for hours and hours every night and cry. And eat ice cream.
I'm sorry, I'm going to stop the interview right here because that's just a beautiful image and I want it to be true. And so thus, I am making it so. Okay, so that was ephemera number one. Ephemera number two, this is where we can do a little learning annex with Tucky Williams. I was thinking, Tucky, of maybe starting yoga for the first time this summer. I've never done it before.
Okay.
Talk me through it.
Get a good teacher.
That's what I'm worried about.
The most important thing.
Tell our listeners how they know if they found a good yoga teacher.
Well, where are you? Are you in LA?
I'm in Cleveland.
Oh, okay. Well, there are probably some good teachers there. Definitely in Cleveland. You just kind of have to go to a lot of studios. There are a lot of bad teachers with big expensive studios and a lot of really great teachers with little dinky studios, so you have to try them all out. You know, I mean, if you live in LA or New York, you can look up, you know, the best instructors in the world and find out when they're going to be in town and do it that way. But if you're in Cleveland, there are going to be some great instructors there. You just have to visit some different studios. And if you don't have an amazing experience the first time, then go to a different place because eventually you'll go and you'll be like, oh, okay, this is what it's all about.
I'm very nervous. I'm not the most flexible guy, Tucky.
You know, it's not really about flexibility. That's just one aspect of it.
Okay.
The class I teach is a lot about strength, mostly. They're mostly there to sweat.
That's what I like. I would like to feel like I definitely worked at it. And we're all going to come. Listeners, we're all going next week to Tucky's class. We'll all meet there at 4. Let's just say at 4 p.m.
All right.
Perfect.
All right. I'm ready. Get ready to sweat.
What other projects do you have coming up that you are excited about? You're writing the second season. I'm seeing things about Breaking Bella online. Tell everybody about that.
Oh my gosh. Well, I don't know if that's coming out. That was my feminist film about, you know, the way women are perceived as sexual chattel. And it's very depressing, and I don't know if I'll release it because I saw it and it was so sad.
Oh, but that sounds important.
I know.
That sounds important.
I shot that back in 2014. Yes, I know. I should release it. I'm holding on to it and waiting for the right moment. So, yes, I'm holding back on that one.
Okay.
And it was fun to make, though. I got to make out with a boy. Oh, that was interesting.
I've done it. It's fun.
It is fun. Oh, he was a cute boy, too, because I got to cast. They submit their resume and headshots and videos, and so I got to pick out of like 500, I got to pick the one I wanted to kiss.
Nice.
Isn't that great?
It's pretty good. That's not the way it normally works in my social life. That's so great.
He was tall, dark, and handsome.
There it is.
I had fun. I as much fun as I could have. Trust me, I had fun.
We have had so many of your filmmaking colleagues on the show over the years, and one of those topics that comes up over and over again are the challenges involved in being a woman, being a queer woman, getting this content out there. Talk to our listeners about what that process has been like generally for you to be in this community and get this material out there where people so desperately want it.
Oh, well, this is what I tell people, no matter what, is surround yourself with good people.
Yeah.
People like you, positive people. And if there's someone negative around, just let them go and don't worry about it and have good people. So I seek out good people like you. And, I work with people like you and have a lot of really great friends and I stay in touch with them and we all help each other out. And the main thing is make something that somebody's going to want to watch.
Yeah.
You know, that's something you have to think. But, you know, people send me screenplays they want me to read all the time. And before I read it, I say, well, first off, you know, can this be made for less than $5,000? Because if it can't be, then there's nothing else I can say to you. The second thing is, tell me the one thing that is going to hook people. And they say, well, it's really good. And I'm like, yeah, okay, but this is America. That's not enough. So give me something really, really good. Give me an angle. Give me a twist. It has to be some kind of twist on it. With Girl Scene, it was, it was that I played that character that was sort of the girl who acted like a boy character. And that kind of hadn't been seen a lot at that point when I started that. And it also had the negative depiction of life as a gay woman. And, you know, with this one, the hook is that it's fantasy sci-fi. So that those are the three pieces of advice that I would give.
Nice. Well, we have...
Is that a good answer?
That was a great answer. I love it.
Okay.
That was great.
Thanks.
We have one incredible listener who listens to us every week on Valley Free Radio on 103.3 FM in Northampton, Massachusetts. Shout out,
woo!
Northampton, Massachusetts. We love... And when we talk about films, she writes in, and she's so passionate about it, and I love it. And I'm going to pose her question to you. Her question is, why don't we see more lesbians with short hair in these mediums?
Well, the truth is that when you're an actor, you have limited roles if you have short hair. So you want to have something, if your hair's short, you know, you can't go long. If you have long hair, you can go short for a part. But actresses are very reluctant to cut their hair off because, you know, the next role they might need to look really feminine. So that's the answer. It's nothing complicated.
There it is. I feel like she's going to be very happy with that answer, and it will satisfy that question. I love
it. Really?
When people finish watching Dagger Kiss, they watch all 8 episodes and they shut their computer, what do you want them to walk away with?
I want them to be happy and to think, oh, that was really sweet, and to feel kind of like, and have a good day the rest of the day, to feel kind of inspired. This is a show where it's good characters who are going to win in the end of the day, and you know that from the beginning. And it's a show, there's no violence against women in it. There's nothing bad. It's feminist. This is a world where there's no homophobia. It's its own world, and it's such a positive thing, and there are bad guys in it. But, you know, they're going to lose. And I want this to be how people see life, is that there are struggles, but, you know, if you're a good person and you keep being a good person, you're going to win in the end. And this show affirms that.
I love it. That's so great. This is no reflection of your acting because I love your acting. I will say that I felt like in watching you on screen, in addition to you playing the part very well, you also very much enjoyed, as Tucky Williams, having some magical powers. Did you not?
Oh, of course I did. It's so funny when you do it, though, when you film it, like the scene where I kill the guy with my magical powers, because you're just motioning and there's no sound, and I just kind of felt like a fool making all these hand motions, and everybody's standing around staring at me. You can't see, like, you know, the 10 people standing there staring at me, and I'm just making all these hand motions and trying to make it look like I'm killing this guy. And he's, you know, the actor was wonderful. He acted like he was actually being killed, but you see it on screen, it looks fine. But at the time I was like, you know, I was asking people, I was like, do I look okay doing this?
I don't usually notice the sound effects, and that is a very key role in Dagger's Kiss. The sound effects and the score going on in the background. Key piece of this puzzle.
Huge, huge. I have a sound designer, Anna Gramlich, who just really, that was one of the main characters in the show, was the sound.
Yeah. Well, now tell all of our listeners where they can go to go check out Dagger Kiss.
You go to daggerkiss.com. It's dagger, just singular, daggerkiss.com. Daggerkiss.com. And that will take you to all the episodes. It will take you lots of fun stuff. It will take you to some pictures, and you'll get to learn all about the series.
There it is. And listeners, you can, of course, stroll on over to luckytucky.com. I mean, that's one of the greatest website names out there, right?
Well, thank you.
That is fun. LuckyTucky.com, and you can learn all about Tucky Williams. You can certainly access Dagger Kiss. There's so much content there for you guys to experiment with. Now, I will tell you this, as I told you years ago, one of the things that I love about you is what we just keep saying over and over. You are creating the content that people want. But what I in particular love about you doing it is it's so clear that you have a passion for doing it. You're not doing it to make a million. you're not doing it for your own name prestige. You're doing it because you want this content out there. And as our listeners have provided that feedback, and I know that you've gotten that feedback as well, it's content that is so sorely needed. You are doing a great thing, Taki.
Thank you. And I'm so honored and happy to be doing it.
Let's not wait another 5 years, please.
Oh, please.
Taki, please keep doing what you're doing.
Only if you do.
You got it. It's a deal.
Lay down your sweet and weary head. Night is falling. You've come to journey's end. Sleep now. Dream of the ones who came before.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we have tons of time left on this week's episode to get to all of the latest news out there, so let's get started. But first, let's pause for a second. If you are not following everything that is happening with the murder of Alton Sterling, there's also a developing story right this very second at the time of this recording that another shocking video from another shooting involving our brothers and sisters of color and the police. You have to stay on top of these things. You have to be supporting all of our brothers and sisters of color. This is one of the difficult things about doing this work. I think it's one of the things that we do in the LGBTQ community that makes it more difficult for those of us doing this work who are not building those bridges. Yes, right this second, there are no gay angles to any of these stories, but we're talking about privilege. We're talking about people who need their voices lifted up. And that's what our community is all about. And we can't just get involved when there's a gay angle. Where's the gay angle here? What do we do? Because that's not what we're looking for when we look for support. When we have an issue where we need support, if you look at Orlando, people came from all over and said, we support the LGBT community. I do want to pause right there and say that was a story that also was problematic in the way that it was covered because a disproportionate number of the victims there in Orlando were our brothers and sisters of color. And that wasn't covered as much as it should have been. If we're going to go so far as to remind the media, which we should be doing, hey, this wasn't just the murder of humans. This wasn't just the murder of Americans. This was the murder of LGBT Americans. Well, it was also the murder of our Latino and our Latina brothers and sisters in the LGBT community. So there was that angle that was not covered nearly enough. And I have some great friends in my life who have done some incredible work. One woman named Carmen Lane, you can look her up online, who did such a great job at just highlighting, hey, where's the conversation taking us here? But let's put that aside. Again, right now, there is no LGBT angle that we can see in the Alton Sterling shooting. But that doesn't mean that we sit back and don't get involved. This is where we in the LGBTQ community need to step up and say, we hear you. We support you. We want to be involved here too. What is it that we can do? And by the way, one of the things that we can do is just listen and tell everybody, hey, we are here for you. And not just look for that gay angle. So again, please stay on top of these things. Just be in the know so that you can be there, not just for our brothers and sisters of color, but also because that's a huge part of the LGBTQ community. And we need to highlight that at each and every opportunity. So Alton Sterling, and again, another story that's developing right now. And I'm sure when you guys finally hear this episode, you will know more about it. Right now, it's just developing. So, other news out there, tons of other news out there. Let's start with the election. The Democratic National Committee, just at the end of last week, released a draft platform offering the first glimpse of how the party will frame this upcoming election and the issues it illuminates. This story comes to you from The Advocate. In comparison with previous year's platforms, issues affecting LGBT Americans appear to be more tightly woven into the fabric of the platform. In the 35-page document, a single paragraph is dedicated exclusively to LGBT issues. And what appears to be a first for the Democratic Party platform, they use the word transgender twice. David Badesh at the New Civil Rights Movement notes, however, that the platform uses the term LGBT 11 times, which is more than double the usage of that phrase in the 2012 platform. Look how far we have come in 4 years. This year's draft platform mentioned sexual orientation and gender identity 3 times, each in succession on paragraphs about civil rights and military service, but nowhere in the document do the words gay, lesbian, or bisexual appear. The paragraph titled LGBT Rights reads this. I'm going to read the whole thing to you because this is important. We need to know what it is that the Democrats stand for in their official platform. This is what it reads. Quote, Democrats applaud last year's decision by the Supreme Court that recognized LGBT people, like every other American, have the right to marry the person they love. But there is still much work to be done. LGBT kids continue to be bullied at school. A restaurant can refuse to serve a transgender person, and a same-sex couple is at risk of being evicted from their home. That is unacceptable and must change. Democrats will fight for comprehensive federal non-discrimination protections for all LGBT Americans and push back against state efforts to discriminate against LGBT individuals. We will combat LGBT youth homelessness and improve school climates, and we will protect transgender individuals from violence. We will promote LGBT human rights and ensure America's foreign policy is inclusive of LGBT people around the world. End quote. That is the paragraph in the Democratic platform that's coming up real soon at the Democratic National Convention there in Philadelphia. The draft platform also features a paragraph on HIV and AIDS, though it does not explicitly mention LGBT people in that section. Instead, it states that, quote, Democrats believe an AIDS-free generation is in our grasp, and they pledge to increase research funding for the National Institutes of Health, cap pharmaceutical expenses for people living with HIV and AIDS, address HIV criminalization laws, and expand access for HIV prevention medications, particularly for the populations most at risk of infection. So that's what's happening there in the Democratic platform. Not so much there in the Republican platform. They are still finalizing that. Though we will say this, Donald Trump, who has put himself out there as a friend, he's a friend to the gays. He supports the LGBT community. Or at least he's saying he supports it more than Hillary Clinton. Donald Trump's argument is that the Clinton Foundation has taken money, so many millions of dollars, from such horribly anti-gay countries. And in that light, Donald Trump, even though he opposes same-sex marriage, is a friend to the LGBT community. Well, again, this might change by the time you guys hear this because it changes minute by minute. But right now, one of the top contenders for the VP selection for the Republican Party is Governor Pence of Indiana. Governor Pence of Indiana, who we have spent, I don't know, maybe hours talking about on this show, Is So Gay, just in the past year, as he championed the Religious Freedom Protection Act there in Indiana, which really gave businesses and other entities the license to discriminate against the LGBT community. The backlash was tremendous. It did not work out well there. I was reading an article this morning that, yes, there are hardcore Republicans who think that Governor Pence would be a great selection as a VP choice because he would bring in the conservative element for Donald Trump, some conservative and Tea Party folks who are not likely to support Donald Trump. But apparently there are also Republicans there in Indiana who are saying, yeah, please take him. Just take him. Take him away from Indiana. He has not done well in this state. So Donald Trump, who is putting himself out there as a friend to the LGBT community, is choosing one of the bastions of being anti-gay in the Governor's Association. Whether or not Mike Pence is anti-gay, I have no idea. I don't know Mike Pence. But he has become the bellwether. He was the face for what it looked like to be a proponent of anti-gay legislation. And that might be our VP selection there for Donald Trump. We will see. Looking over to North Carolina, because I feel like you can't do This Show Is So Gay in this day and age here in 2016 without talking about North Carolina. And again, all of our listeners in North Carolina, we know that we have incredible, incredible listeners in North Carolina. And we want to give you that shout out. WPVM, The Voice, 103.7 FM, Asheville, North Carolina. We love you guys. We hate that this is the way we talk about your state, but it's one of the things that hits the wires on the rainbow wires. Attorneys for the Department of Justice, they filed a motion in federal district court this week seeking to prevent North Carolina officials from enforcing the anti-trans provisions of the state's controversial anti-LGBT law, known, of course, as House Bill 2. Although the Justice Department has claimed in a federal lawsuit announced in May that HB 2 as a whole violates existing civil rights laws, this week's filing seeks to stop the state from implementing the portion of the law that requires transgender people to use public bathrooms, locker rooms, and other sex-segregated spaces that do not match their gender identity. The filing seeks a preliminary injunction to prevent the anti-trans section of the law specifically from being enforced while the Department of Justice's lawsuit against North Carolina proceeds. The motion names North Carolina Governor Pat McCrory, the state's Department of Public Safety, and leaders of the University of North Carolina system as defendants, since the state-run school is also subject to the law. Though I do want to remind you that administrators there at the University of North Carolina system, which includes Margaret Spellings, who, again, if you don't know who Margaret Spellings is from the wonderful world of higher education, she's quite legendary, maybe not in the best ways, but she's quite legendary. They have said that they're not even sure how they were going to enforce it. So it continues, and it continues there in North Carolina. There's still big questions about the NBA All-Star Game, and is it going to happen in North Carolina, and all these people are in talks, and it would certainly be a huge blow to a portion of the North Carolinian economy if the All-Star Game did not happen there. But these are some of the effects that we are seeing, all because of House Bill 2. I mean, what we're seeing with this and both the platform for the Democratic National Committee, we're seeing an integration here. That we don't just talk about LGBT issues in a vacuum, that other people are stepping forward and saying, well, if you are against this, well, then it's going to affect here too. Or in the platform piece, hey, we are for this, but yes, we're going to have this very specific paragraph, but it's pretty short. That's what people are noting. It's been longer in other years, but it's more interwoven into the rest of the platform. So we're seeing a real integration here, and that is always, always, always a good thing. But that is not the only lawsuit out there right now. There is another lawsuit that's getting a lot of attention, and it's in the wonderful world of online dating. Men can now check out men, and women can search for women on the religious dating site Christian Mingle, which previously sanctioned only heterosexual relationships. The site opened to gay users after settling a lawsuit that claimed that it violated California's non-discrimination law. But the new search function likely won't prove very useful to gay men or women. The site now lets them view profiles of the same gender, but does not specifically show them fellow gay users. Not sure how that's going to work. Gay Christian Network Executive Director Justin Lee, who was on our show just a few weeks ago, he said this, quote, "My sense is that a fair number of gay Christians will probably not be interested simply because they're not interested in giving money to a company that has to be forced by the courts to serve them." Yeah, that's pretty right there, Justin Lee. Well said. The lawsuit, according to Christianity Today, argued that Christian Mingle violated California's non-discrimination law that prohibits for-profit companies such as Spark Networks, which owns Christian Mingle, from discriminating against customers on the basis of sexual orientation, among other categories. In an email to the Washington Post, Spark Networks said it has no plans to advertise the site to gay Christians or to go further to make the site work for gay or bisexual users. The email said this, quote, "Like all other companies, we must abide by the laws that govern our state and nation." Prior to this lawsuit, the site offered two options, man seeking woman or woman seeking man. Now it asks users their own gender, offering two choices, male or female. Then it shows them the profiles of users of the other sex, but lets them switch to same-sex profiles if they choose. Unlike several other dating sites which specifically show gay users the profiles of fellow gay users, a lesbian who searches Christian Mingle for women right this very second, she would end up viewing mostly the profiles of straight women. And same for a gay man. If a gay man goes on there, he would be viewing mostly the profiles of other straight men, which kind of defeats the purpose. Justin Lee said this, quote, "Nobody wants to have to search through a bunch of profiles of straight folks who are not interested in you." So it's a step there at Christian Mingle, but in terms of the utility of it, where it is right now, not so much. Not so much. So I would encourage people to start their own gay Christian dating site. There probably is one. I would have to imagine there is one already. I have absolutely no idea. But yeah, go start your own. Go start your own. Story out of San Francisco. One of the nation's most celebrated gay bars may soon go out of business after a new landlord more than doubled the rent, which is part of a trend that has old-timers lamenting that the San Francisco they know and love is disappearing. At 50 years old, The Stud. There's a bar called The Stud. The Stud is the longest continuously running gay bar in the city and known throughout the country as one of the bohemian, gender-bending, anything-goes institutions that made San Francisco into a gay mecca. A sign at the front door, decorated with gold tinsel, reads, "Everyone is welcome at The Stud. Dream it, be it." There you go. So The Stud may soon be going out of business. And again, for those of us who are putting out there, oh, gay bars just aren't that important anymore. And right, there's a little bit of irony in what I'm saying, because I just finished saying there's an integration. There's an integration happening all over the place, which is really great to see. But that does not diminish the importance of gay bars. It doesn't. And we don't have to point to Orlando and the importance of Orlando and the effects that that's having, though I don't want to minimize that. I don't think there's any way to minimize that. But at the end of the day, we in the LGBTQ community, we do not have equal rights. And if you are out there saying, oh, everything's great, as I've said a million times over on the show, we have marriage equality. That's one thing. And it's a great thing. And we just celebrated 1 year of marriage equality. And it was a wonderful, wonderful thing. And it continues to be a wonderful, wonderful thing. But conversion therapy, still legal in 46 or 47 states. And that's extraordinarily harmful, right? Adoption, still work to be done there. Work to be done in our faith community. Certainly work to be done in the trans community to support our trans brothers and sisters, in particular, our trans brothers and sisters of color. So much work to be done. And at the end of the day, there are times that you just want to be around other people who do not have equal rights as well. Because I wake up in the morning, it's not the first thought that I think, but often I wake up and think, holy crap, I do not have equal rights. And sometimes, after spending a day around people with equal rights, I would like to be around some other people who have the same limited number of rights I have. And a gay bar provides that haven. And so the importance of gay bars, huge. We hope The Stud can make it. Maybe they're doing some sort of crowdsource funding. I have absolutely no idea. We'll look into that. But if you're there in San Francisco, go out. Go support The Stud and all the other gay bars out there. Doesn't mean that you have to drink. I went to the Happy Dog last night. If you're ever in Cleveland, the first Wednesday of every month is a storytelling show here. I performed last night in the storytelling show, and I went, and I spent $10-$12, and I did not have a drop of alcohol. I had cream soda. When was the last time you guys had cream soda? It was delicious. Now I love that. So go support these different establishments. They could use your support. Let's go a little bit abroad. Let's turn to Cuba. Members of Cuba's first gay men's chorus are scheduled to perform in Washington, D.C. this weekend. The five members of Mano a Mano will perform at the Church of the Epiphany in downtown Washington on July 10th as part of their first U.S. tour. They are scheduled to arrive in the nation's capital on Friday. The tour began in Glendale, California on June 25th with a joint concert with the Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles. There are clips online. They are performing Bohemian Rhapsody. It is wonderful. This is Mano a Mano. Go look them up. They are members of Cuba's first gay men's chorus. Exciting stuff. They're coming out of Cuba. Turning to my homeland of New Jersey, Kinsey Ratzman's coming out went even better than she expected. The 17-year-old New Jersey teenager came out to her parents in June when they directly asked her if she was gay. That's what Kinsey told the Daily News. She said this quote, "My parents had asked me if I was in a relationship, and when I said yes, they proceeded to ask if it was with a girl. I think they had suspicions for a while, which prompted that question." Seeing how well her family reacted, Ratzman then came out online. She wrote this on Instagram, quote, "A year ago today, I found out that I'd be able to marry the love of my life in my own country. I was a very happy pup, hashtag love wins. And oh yeah, by the way, I'm gay and this is me coming out, yikes." She wrote that on Instagram. Now, that is not the end of this story, because Kinsey's parents, they were not done. After sending Ratzman and her cousin to the mall for supplies for an early Independence Day party on July 2nd, her family set up, for their surprise, a pride party to celebrate their daughter. How much do we love this? Everyone came to the party, her brother, aunt, uncle, cousins, and grandparents. Kinsey told the Daily News this, quote, "They were all involved in the planning of it. They were just happy I was happy with it." I love this. Parents celebrating their daughter's pride. She posted the whole party online, complete with rainbow decorations, food, and cake, red, white, and blue on the outside, rainbow on the inside. She said this, quote, "It was so sweet, and I was honestly so shocked. I never expected that reaction." So wonderful. She said that she has received hundreds of messages and she's tried to respond to all of them. She said, quote, "So many people from the LGBT community, as well as many straight allies, have shared their own experiences or have even asked for my guidance." She said she did receive a couple negative responses. She said, quote, "I've responded to a few that I've seen getting retweeted because it's really not good to have them spread that hate. But for the most part, I just ignore them because if you don't, you're just feeding into their ego." This is our new buddy, Kinsey. Oh my gosh, Kinsey Ratzman in New Jersey, whose parents threw her a pride party. Parents, if you are listening to this, do this. Do this thing for your gay son or daughter. And it's never too late. It doesn't have to be just when they're coming out. If my parents are listening, mom and dad, next time I come home, I'm okay with you throwing me a pride party. I don't think it's going to happen, but I'm okay with you throwing me a pride party. That would be wonderful. That'll be wonderful. So that's a happy story. The next story, not as happy. This happened just across the water there from New Jersey to New York. On July 4th, police made sweeps and arrests at a gay beach in New York City, much to the surprise of beachgoers. At the far corner of Jacob Riis Park, a gay beach that has been a notorious LGBT safe haven for decades and where women can go topless without being leered at, police descended unannounced. My God, this is like Stonewall. One beachgoer, gay Brooklyn photographer Chris Fox, found himself the primary target of the holiday police sweep. Fox told the Daily Dot this week that he was photographing someone against the fence that borders the gay section of Riis for an Instagram photo series he's been working on all summer. While shooting the photos, Fox stood with a towel wrapped around his waist. His shorts had gotten sandy in the waves and were drying in the sun. Suddenly, the towel loosened and dropped. Before Fox could refasten it around his waist, he was tackled. He was tackled to the ground by a squad of police. Fox told the Daily Dot that police had dominated the gay beach all day, quote, "on horses in uniform undercover, and they were everywhere." But Fox didn't expect to be arrested, he said, because he hadn't done anything wrong. He said, quote, "I just didn't wrap my towel around my waist tight enough, and it suddenly slipped down, and I literally got sent to jail for it." This park is a National Park Service area rather than a city beach, meaning the rules are different and a casual legal status allows for more freedom. Alcohol is sold on the boardwalk and nudity is common, so common that many in the LGBT community believe that it's legal to go naked at the gay beach. Fox said this, quote, "I'd always heard that it was a clothing optional beach. I keep running it over and over in my head, and I can't even begin to answer why they chose me. I wasn't causing a scene. I was just shooting a photo of someone like I always do." He said that he is shy and he would never run around naked, and the towel slipping was an accident. There's some videos of this online with him being just dragged away and he's screaming, "Help me." On the boardwalk, LGBT witnesses huddled together and cried out to the officers as they loaded Fox into one of the approximately 7 patrol cars parked there. So raids, there are police raids still happening. We need to be aware of these things. You have to be safe out there, folks. You have to be safe. And finally, let's turn our attention to Brazil, Rio de Janeiro. This comes to us from the New York Times. I'm going to read a little bit of it. The assailant struck as Gabriel Figueira Lima, 21 years old, stood on a street 2 weeks ago in a city in the Amazon, plunging a knife into his neck and speeding off on the back of a motorcycle, leaving him to die. A few days earlier, in the coastal state of Bahia, 2 beloved teachers were killed as well, their charred remains found in the trunk of a burning car. Last month, it was Wellington's Julio de Castro Castro Mendononca, a shy 24-year-old retail clerk who was bludgeoned and stoned to death near a highway in the city northwest of Rio. In a nation seemingly inured to crime, the brutal killing stood out. The victims were not robbed. The police have yet to identify any suspects, and all of the dead were either gay or transgender. While Americans have fiercely debated how to respond to the massacre last month in Orlando, Brazilians have been confronting their own epidemic of anti-gay violence, one that by some counts has earned Brazil the ranking of the world's deadliest place for lesbians, gays, bisexuals, and transgender people. And by the way, do I need to remind you all? I don't think that I do. But they are the hosts to the upcoming Summer Olympics. I have been reading story after story that the Olympics should absolutely not happen there in Brazil. That the water is just intensely toxic. So there's that. That the police are saying, hey, by the way, we're not really sure how we're going to be able to protect everyone who's coming here. And now this in the New York Times, a whole story which I encourage you to check out. The name of the story is Brazil is Confronting an Epidemic of Anti-Gay Violence. So excited when there are out athletes competing, and yet so worried for these out athletes to go to Brazil. Again, we're not trying to categorize an entire country as being anti-gay, though apparently it is one of the least safe places to be gay. Not good, not good. I don't think they can just cancel an Olympics at this time. I think it's probably too late, but yeah, there's a lot of people just not going. So we'll be watching out for that coverage. First, of course, we have the Republican National Convention that is coming up in less than 2 weeks here in Cleveland, Ohio. If you are coming to Cleveland, please be safe. Please, please, please be safe. And reach out. Send me an email, ken@thisshowisogay.com. If there's a gay angle, if you're a reporter coming to cover a story, reach out to me and we'll get you on the show. We would love to do some pieces from the RNC. And that, my friends, is all we have time for on this week's episode. Our huge, huge, ginormous thanks to Tucky Williams. Dagger Kiss is so much fun. You very much are going to enjoy it. And by the way, this is not, we talk week in and week out about some content that you need to pay for to access. Not Dagger Kiss. Just go on over to daggerkiss.com. And you can watch episodes there, or you can go to LuckyTucky.com and learn all about the wonderful Tucky Williams. She is doing such great stuff, and this is what we're telling you guys to do. Get out there. Go use your voice the way you know how to use it to make a difference for your LGBTQ and ally brothers and sisters. Again, pay attention to what is going on to our brothers and sisters of color, and use your voice, even if you're just using your voice to say, I hear you. That makes a huge difference. Do not meet all of these stories with silence. That is not what we do. That's not what we want when we need support, and that's not what we should be doing to support all of these other communities that need our support. We have to work together. Get out there. Go use your voice to make a difference. And while you're out there using your voice, while you're out there making a difference, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?